From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
What's up? This your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Let us talk NFL once again.
Check it out,
we
man.
Do this in some form. This gentleman has been kind enough to join me, either on a podcast or on the radio show, for 8 years in a row now, I think, at this time of year. And I cannot thank him enough. And I bet you when I said 8 years, he's like, no, it can't be 8 years. Ladies and gentlemen, the creator of FootballOutsiders.com and a real pioneer in pro football analytics, maybe the pioneer, quite frankly, it's our buddy Aaron Schatz. Good morning, Aaron.
8 years? No, it can't be 8 years.
There it is. It's like I fed you that line. Yes, it is. It's 8 years, Aaron. Aaron Schatz, who also works for ESPN, we should note, at @FO_ASchatz. That's S-C-H-A-T-Z. Aaron, we'll get to the four games this weekend, but you know what I have to ask you first. You at Football Outsiders, you've been going back in history, and you sort of got, I don't want to say stalled, but, you know, you slowed down when you got to 1986 and then into 1985. But you have completed 1985. Up until now, the Skins of 91 were number one all-time through DVOA. The 2007 Patriots were second. Did the 85 Bears eclipse them both?
The answer is no for the regular season. And for the playoff, if you include playoffs, they do eclipse the 2007 Patriots. But we still have your 1991 Redskins as our number one team of all time,
yes.
Even including the playoffs.
Yes. I don't know why this makes me so happy, Aaron, but it does. Your numbers validates it.
Obviously, look, this is only one way to measure. There are multi, you know, there's lots of different statistical methods to measure the past. But this is the first time anybody has gone back and actually analyzed down to the play-by-play level for
yes.
these years from the 80s and 90s. So we do have, you know, if you want to declare that the playoffs are twice as important as the regular season, then the Bears would slightly pass the Redskins. When I say with the playoffs included, I'm including the playoffs with each playoff game with the same importance as the regular season. And don't forget, as dominant as the 85 Bears were in the playoffs, the 91 Redskins also were really good in the playoffs. I mean, in the Super Bowl, they were up 31-10 before mm-hmm. the Bills scored two touchdowns in, you know, what was essentially garbage time, and they won the NFC Championship by 41-10. So, you know, it wasn't quite as dominant as the Bears in 85, but it was pretty darn good.
I attended both of those, and you're right, 41-10 against the Lions, and then it was 24-0, I believe, also in that Super Bowl. Kurt Gouveia picked off a pass, pick six, at the beginning of the second half, and it was pretty much Katie barred the door. But this is so prideful for me because, you know, and this I'll speak for Redskin fans, and we'll get off this, but the Redskins are akin to me, and I've said this before on the podcast and on the show, on the radio show, they're akin to the San Antonio Spurs in the sense that when people talk about basketball, the Lakers are the shiny object, or the Chicago Bulls were the shiny object, but the Spurs had this excellence over a long period of time, and they just sort of crept up every few years, and people just took it for granted. And I think the Redskins, also with players who didn't really seek out attention in the press, right? Tim Duncan was Art Monk. Didn't hate the press, just didn't really want to get interviewed. They're kind of that. And so I don't want that team to ever get lost in history. And thank God for you, Aaron. You make sure it hasn't happened.
Yeah, they were not the media stars that the 85 Bears were, certainly. And the other thing is, you don't have the same... The 85 Bears sort of... They built that team. 84, the defense was really good. 86, the defense was really good. You know, it's sort of the Redskins came more out of nowhere. Sort of, you know, they had a lot of 10-win seasons, but you know, the quarterback kept changing. Right, you know, Gibbs has won three Super Bowls with three different three different quarterbacks. So you don't have the same. They didn't have the same, like, where you know the core was as well known, and then they weren't as media friendly. So. You know, as much as they had a lot of 10-win seasons, they were just 10-win seasons. Like the two seasons before were 10-6, the one before that was 7-9. So you don't have the same sort of build and hype that the 85 Bears had, right? I mean, the 85 Bears recorded Super Bowl Shuffle during the season. Nothing said they were actually going to win the Super Bowl.
That's right. During
they could have been like the 2007 Patriots and blown the Super Bowl, and then they'd be like, what did we record this for?
By the way, all of this through the prism of Aaron's stat over there, Football Outsiders, DVOA, Defense Adjusted Value Over Average, which calculates a team's record, a team's success, rather, based on the down and distance of each play during the season, then calculates how much more or less successful each team is compared to the league average. That's a short hack explanation of it. Bearing the headline, though, perhaps I am, as we move to 2019, because on that list of the greatest teams of all time through DVOA, at number seven, Aaron, sits the 2019 Baltimore Ravens. Do tell.
Yes. For the regular season, you know, not including the playoffs, since they haven't played in the playoffs yet. But yes, the Baltimore Ravens are our number seven regular season team of all time. And that is, I don't think people realize just what a juggernaut this Ravens team is. Like the Bears of 85 and the Redskins of 91, like you have to be in order to be one of the best teams of all time. They were a really well-rounded team. They were number one on offense, number four on defense, and number 10 in special teams, basically because they had one bad game. Without week 15, they'd be like number three in special teams. So they were just really good all around, and They're going into the playoffs as a really dominant team. In our simulations, they win the Super Bowl 44% of the time.
44% of the time. I would assume San Francisco would be the next highest percentage.
We have the San Francisco and Kansas City essentially tied, 14.2.
Oh, interesting. But all the way down to 14.2 from 44%.
Yeah, that's a big, we really just have Baltimore as dominant, because also, if you look at Baltimore, they've played, their bad games were so early in the season that if you look at how they've played for the last 10 weeks, they've had a DVOA in their single games of over 30% for 10 straight weeks. Well, the only other team that had over 30% for the entire year was Kansas City at 30.2. So essentially, Baltimore, every one of their last 10 games, has been better than every other team has been for the whole season.
Wow, your numbers really
low. There's no off games in there.
No, you're right.
Like, they haven't had any off games. The close games have been against good opponents. So once you adjust for their opponent, they're playing very well in all of their games.
I don't hugely disagree with that, but I'm sure there are people listening who are pretty surprised by that gap. That's pretty stark. So Baltimore is the number 17. The 2019 Ravens are the number 17 all time through DVOA, through the lens of DVOA. Were there any other superlatives, let's call it, top 20-ish stuff, either to the bad or to the good? Let's be very interesting to hear to the bad also, per unit or overall.
Yeah, well, the Patriots were sitting among our top ever defenses for most of the year, and then had their worst game of the season in week 17 against Miami. Yeah, absolutely fell fat on their faces.
Yeah.
And as a result, fell out of our top 10. So the 2019 Patriots defense comes out as our number 16 defense of all time.
Interesting. Interesting. So that, and were it not for that Miami game, they're a top 10 team easily.
If it's not for that Miami game, they're a top 10 defense of all time.
Of all time.
Yes.
Were there any just go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Tampa Bay Bucks, which nobody thought about, but their pass defense was mediocre, but their run defense was spectacular. And they come out as our number six best run defense ever.
Number six best run defense ever, the Bucks of this year. I don't think there's a single person listening who would have guessed that. Wow.
If you had Christian McCaffrey or Alvin Kamara, you know they had really bad games against Tampa Bay compared to the rest of their season.
Yeah. And it is also why fantasy, pundits loved every Buccaneers game. It's why the overs cashed so well for the Buccaneers. Part of the reason, because everybody was throwing on them. You couldn't run on them. So everybody had to go to the air. And then there's the Jameis factor.
And the opposite was the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers were the fifth worst run defense we've ever measured. And fantasy, if you like over-unders, you like the Carolina Panthers for the opposite reason, because you could go over on all of the running backs and Carolina would give up the yardage.
They sure would. Redskins had two 100-yard backs against them, I believe. Over 200. Yeah, I mean, so many games where they were just getting crushed on defense. And so no overall to the bad top 20 this year?
Miami. Miami was our sixth worst overall defense and our fourth worst pass defense. Because even as Miami solved its offense, it had an average offense over the second half of the year. Their defense and their pass defense in particular continued to be bad over the second half of the year. I mean, other than that pick six, Brady played reasonably well in that week 17 game. The problem was that the Patriots defense shut down and the Miami offense played well. So the Miami defense was still bad for the whole year.
So you said sixth worst defense overall, fourth worst pass defense overall?
Yep.
And yet they all this talk about them drafting a quarterback, like that's not going to help.
Well, they need one in the long term. Their quarterback is 40 years old or whatever.
Yeah, but it seems like that's not, I mean, based on what you just said, good Lord, they're missing the point, it seems like, because they can.
Yeah, but I the quarterback is still how you build your team for the future.
Yeah.
And that team is about building for the future at this point. So that's still what they really need is a quarterback. And
okay.
You want to use a lot of their other draft picks on defense, that's okay with me. They gave up a lot of passing yardage.
Last thing on the season long. How many of the 12 playoff teams did your numbers predict before the season started correctly?
I think we were at 7 this year. But Tennessee and Green Bay were like the first team predicted out in each conference.
I see. So you got you're very close to 9.
That's how we ended up with 7 instead of 9, yeah.
All right, I lied. One last one, and this is a two-pronged. What's the team that's under the radar that perhaps didn't make the playoffs? Perhaps they did make the playoffs, but mostly likely didn't make the playoffs, that the average fan is not really thinking about for futures bets into next year that you think really underperformed, and what's the team that is the most overperforming that's in the playoffs?
Well, I think that everybody knows about Dallas. Everybody's going to be hammering Dallas on future bets next year because anybody who's smart enough to bet on this stuff knows that offense is more consistent than defense, that they were really bad in close games, that they're going to probably have a coaching change, that that'll help them with close games, right? Dallas was sixth in our numbers despite being 8-8. So that's the team that stands out for next year as being better than their win-loss record. But the other one is the Rams. The Rams were 12th at 9-7. Right, I think there's some people feel like the Rams fell apart, but if you look at their overall play, the Rams did not fully fall apart. The offense declined certainly more than expected, but I think the Rams are going to come back a little bit next year.
Cowboys and Rams, I think that makes sense to everybody. And then what's the most overachieving where you're like, man, this team probably shouldn't be in the postseason?
Well, I mean, we'll talk about it when we talk about the postseason game,
okay.
But the lowest rated team of the postseason teams for us is Houston.
Okay, that's a portent of what's coming up right after the break. We'll continue, and we'll talk about the four games specifically this weekend. Aaron Schatz, great stuff from Football Outsiders, at @FO_A_Schatz, S-C-H-A-T-Z.
Keep it right here for more of A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Thursday, January 9th, 2020. It's the Beating the Book podcast, Megapod Division Round. Gil Alexander, along with the staples, Michael Palm from Circus Sports. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Gil. How are you?
I'm doing very well, sir. Thank you for asking. Todd Wishnev from the Showtime docuseries Action. Todd, how you been, man?
Oh, it's just been a thrilling life, Gil. How about you?
And good, but I will say this. We were supposed to have Michael Lombardi on the show today. VSiN's own Michael Lombardi. He also does his own podcast called GM Shuffle. He's got his own book, Gridiron Genius. He writes for The Athletic. Michael does the podcast with Adnan Virk. And Adnan Virk had a death in the family, and so they had to move their podcast to exactly when we're recording ours. So Michael will be with us next week, and dutifully, because we can always depend on him, and we love having him on, because he's really a regular here too. He's really part of the crew. It's my producer number 5 from VSiN. He also has his own show at VSiN. I don't want to bury the headline. Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 Eastern, 4 to 6 Pacific, called Market Watch. It's the great Jeff Parles. Thank you for doing this, Jeff.
Of course, Gil. It's always an honor to be with you and Mike and Toddy. Even though before we started the record button, we sounded like Todd was recording from the surface of the sun.
Yes.
We have him now. It's good.
Todd shows nothing but respect for the show by making sure that he's moving around at all times during the show. So sometimes it sounds echoey and sometimes it doesn't. But Todd is situated not in the kitchen now, correct, Todd?
Well, I respect the show incredibly due to the fact that I just signed a multi-million dollar contract with the Megapod.
Yes, you and, did. You
that's
did.
Why I get $1.1 million per year from doing this, so of course I have to respect it properly.
You weren't supposed to release the details on that, but yes, Megapod, mega year deal for Todd Wishnev. Mike, last week, it was silly of me not to have asked you, so I'm going to ask you right now. Circus Sports, obviously, when Week 17 ended, you had the results of your year-long contest, of your quarter four. How did the initial Circus Sports million conclude, sir?
Well, the gentleman that was in the lead, Booty Blockers, he maintained the lead and held on to win. He really, probably from the halfway point, was in first place. The key game came down to the Eagles and the Giants. He needed the Eagles in Week 17. The person that was in second needed the Giants. Once that result was in and the Eagles covered the 4.5, he was really home free. His name is Isaac Meyer. He is a portfolio manager from Los Angeles, I believe.
Isaac Meyer won it? Are you kidding me?
Do you know Isaac Meyer?
I know him, yes, absolutely.
Are you serious?
Isaac Meyer came up to me. I'm sorry for interrupting you, Mike, but I'm just like astounded. The Isaac Meyer came up to me early in the football season when he had heard me, or might have been, I think it might have even been baseball, when he heard me on Gil's show and obviously saw the Showtime thing. And we had a whole long conversation in the sports book one day, and he messages me on Twitter all the time, or once in a while, and I can't believe that. That's the guy who won it? Wow.
He's 34, Gil. He's a portfolio manager from L.A. He's actually arriving in Vegas this morning. He's going to be on VSiN with Derek and maybe myself this afternoon on My Guys at 3:05. Then tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. At the Golden Gate Circus Sports, we're going to have a ceremony that will be taped. Much like at the Masters, I'll play the role of Jim Nance. Derek will play the club president. Jeff Benson will play the low amateur score. And Isaac Meyer at that time in this ceremony will receive his blue jacket and his $1 million. So very similar to the Masters, other than the fact that a Jew will be allowed there.
Is there really a blue jacket involved?
Yeah. Everybody had to put their jacket size down.
Oh, that's right. That's right. All right.
Yeah, he's 41 regular. We had Derek Taylor make the jacket for him, so this will be the first ceremony.
Isaac Meyer from L.A., 34 years old, the inaugural winner of the Circus Sports million-dollar grand prize. What was his percentage, his final percentage? Do you remember?
Well, he got 58.5. right? Out of what? A possible 85. Well, Todd is very good at math and charismatic. He can do the percentage there.
58.5 divided by 85 is 68.8.
Pretty damn good. Pretty good. And who won the fourth quarter, just to be thorough?
Fourth quarter was for the third out of four quarters, a single winner, Gil, which is really surprising again. The name Tall and Nasty is a gentleman the detail I got was from Montana. And he actually finished with the best quarterly – well, I guess it's what's weighted by the 5 weeks, right? But he finished with 20.5 points to win the fourth quarter, the $142,000.
Nice. And now how do you feel about the Westgate doing quarterlies next year, Mike?
Well, the two changes I wish they would have made, which is the rake percentage and all the free entries they give out. They stood pat with that, and they copied everything else out of Circa, obviously. They're going to quarterly winners, three winners each quarter. They're going to a later time to submit entries on Saturday. They're going to three entries instead of two. So when I heard the news last Tuesday night, I thought it was sort of akin to McDonald's announcing they were dumping the Big Mac and going to serve Whoppers.
Yeah, I thought that answer would be similar to that. People can read in between the lines there if they want. All right, well, congratulations on your first year, man. It was nothing but a success. You guys were pitch perfect. You did everything right from the way you started and sort of began Circus Sports, the way you instituted the contest, all the rules of that contest. And you guys have been such a shot in the arm for Las Vegas sports betting in general, even beyond that contest. So seriously, man, you and Derek deserve a big congratulations.
Derek deserves a lot of credit, and then we deserve credit for hiring a really good team. Obviously, Matt Metcalf, Chris Bennett, Matt Lindemann, and the other risk managers there. I think they've done an outstanding job. What we expected from the first 6 months of the sports book, or 7 months from June 1st till now, it's really exceeded our expectations, the reality of it. And I think we've made a lot of right moves. It's still a big learning curve your first year. As far as contests go, we're looking to either right at the end of this month or early in February announce what our contest or contests will be for football next year and be ready to start taking entries the first week of March.
Awesome, because people who listen to this podcast and did not get a chance to enter this past year, you'll have all the information and they'll be able to make their decision for next year. So hopefully it will be a nice spike, not only from this show, but just in general for your next contest. Todd, and as you call Metcalf and Lindemann, what do you call him?
Jesus and the other guy?
I thought it was Jesus and God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Jesus and God. My fault.
Yes, who run the sports book over there at Circa Sports. And, of course, the big grand open scheduled for December of 2020 for the new Shangri-La sports book at the new Circa. Okay, let's begin. Division round. Two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday. Unlike last week when the NFC was on Sunday and the AFC preceded that on Saturday, back-to-back games in both conferences. This is more traditional now for the division round, where the NFC games are the bookends, the AFC games are in between. Saturday games start a little later, 4:35 p.m. Eastern, 1:35 Pacific, Minnesota at San Francisco. The Vikings, the sixth seed in the NFC, now will play the one seed by virtue of their win at New Orleans over the New Orleans Saints, a game that was, for me, just completely what I will take away from was Sean Payton's horrific time management gaffes at the end of both halves. End of the first half, Drew Brees and the Saints rushed to the line of scrimmage to get a playoff before the two-minute warning when they should have just milked it and taken their time. Instead, Brees throws a pick, which is returned 30 yards. The Vikings end up scoring a touchdown. They take the lead into the locker room when Will Lutz misses a field goal at the end of the half. End of regulation. The Vikings have the ball. Just under 3 minutes left in the game. The Saints have used both of their first two timeouts. They get a sack from Cameron Jordan after two other plays for a loss. And the Saints elect not to use their final timeout. The Vikings are able to run 59 seconds to be precise, off the clock. Saints end up then getting the ball back with less than 2 minutes left. They do matriculate down the field and eventually get the game-tying field goal, but it's a Will Lutz corkscrew job, and the Saints never end up using their third timeout, even had a chance to use it instead of taking a 10-second runoff on a false start. So they basically, at best, tie the game, which is what they ended up doing, and of course they lose in overtime on the Cousins to Kyle Rudolph 4-yard touchdown pass, which does not really get reviewed. Even though Al Riveron said, yeah, we looked at it, it was fine. And that's, to me, what I'll only remember from that game. Kirk Cousins, though, congratulations to him. Never had a playoff win before. He made the throws when he needed to. Troy Aikman called that 43-yarder to Adam Thielen the best pass of Kirk Cousins' career, which set up the game-winning touchdown. San Francisco now, favored by 7 points in this game. The total is 44. Parlay, we start with you, sir.
All right, so this is the toughest game on the board for me. Because I can see about 7 different things occurring in this game. The most likely thing that I see occurring in this game, Gil, I'm not going to pick a side. I'll go over the total here. We're going 44.5 consensus is what I'm seeing right now. San Francisco, really, New Orleans moved the ball whenever they wanted when Taysom Hill was in there. San Francisco's running backs, obviously, is a great collection of backs. I know their offensive line is banged up, but I feel like San Francisco will be able to move the ball. And if Minnesota's offensive line holds up, and this has been the case the whole year against the Niners, when the opposing offensive line is held up against that elite pass rush, the Niners have given up points. And I think Minnesota's offensive line obviously is not the greatest. We saw them turn Green Bay into the 85 Bears in week 16 on that Monday night. But now that the monkey is off Kirk Cousins' back, I have a feeling he's going to play loose with no pressure in this game. And Minnesota's going to hang around and there's going to be points. And this is something in the area code of 31-24 or 28-24 with the Niners winning. But I don't feel comfortable enough laying the 7. So I'll go over the total. In Niners in Minnesota.
And we'll give you 44 consensus on that total.
Even better.
Even better. I'm with you on the side. I have no play on the side pre-flop for me. Nothing. Michael Palm.
I bet this at 6.5, Gil, when the number opened. I laid the points here. I think this is a really tough spot for the Vikings, having playing on 6 days rest and really losing 2 days to travel. Having had to go to New Orleans, come back, then fly to San Francisco, play Sunday afternoon, and then the early game on Saturday. You get a 49ers team that's rested, healthy, had a lot of time to game plan here. And I'm not in love with Kirk Cousins on grass, okay? We've seen his performances on grass through the years have not been great, especially on the road. You can say, yes, they beat San Diego by 30, but San Diego, what, they turn it over 7, 8, 9 times? Kept giving Minnesota the ball. There were defensive scores. I go back to the Bears game, which is probably a better comparison when they played in September to what they'll face in San Francisco. You know, it'll be cool and it'll be windy in San Francisco as well. I think on paper, the 49ers on a neutral field are probably 4.5, 5 points better. So I felt comfortable laying 6.5. I know the numbers moved to 7. But I still think that's a play with the 49ers.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with Kirk Cousins on grass. After all, he played his entire Redskin career and put up a whole bunch of gaudy stats on grass in D.C. But I do have doubts about his decision-making late in games, although obviously we didn't see it at New Orleans. I'm not over that yet. But I also have issues with the Niners in that I love them. I still think they're going to the Super Bowl. But special teams plays a little shoddy sometimes. Kyle Shanahan, for as great as he has been, and I love Kyle Shanahan as a coach, he made RG3 great in D.C., but he makes some curious managerial decisions late in games also. And as Todd has often said, and maybe I'm segueing right to you on this, Todd, there's always that worry that Jimmy G is going to do something wrong at some critical point. So I am just staying off this pre-flop. Todd?
I'm going to lean with Mike. I'm not going to bet this, but I lean San Francisco. And here's why. Minnesota all year was great at home and crappy on the road. It is Kirk Cousins. I don't trust Kirk Cousins. I know he played a good game in New Orleans, but come on. They were up 20-10 and let the other team back in the game. It's not exactly like they, you know, slaughtered New Orleans or anything. San Francisco at any time can open up a giant can of whoop ass on somebody with their running game, their Kittle, their, you know, they can blow people out. They blew the Packers out at home. They blew some other teams out. It doesn't come to mind right away, but they blew other teams out at home. Minnesota is, you know, a similar team to the Green Bay Packers. Why can't San Francisco blow them out if they're playing well? On the other hand, as you said, there's a little nervousness about Jimmy. I don't think it's going to show up here. I think it's going to show up in a bigger round than this. I lean to San Francisco, and I mean, I'm not going to. I'll probably in-game this, but San Francisco is the side for me. I just don't think Minnesota can do it 2 weeks in a row.
San Francisco weather, 55 degree high on Saturday for this. 10% chance of precipitation, so barely at all. But 17 mile per hour winds, which is interesting that comes up on the weather report. As far as the weather for Baltimore, which is the next game on Saturday, should be, let's see, I'm on the wrong day. Saturday, 20% chance of rain. Should really be even warmer in Baltimore than it is in San Francisco, which for people who live in the Bay probably aren't very surprised by that. But should be high 50s in Baltimore. Could be a lot, excuse me, by game time, should be in the 60s. In Baltimore. So very good balmy weather in Baltimore for this one between the Titans and the Ravens. 8:15 p.m. start in Charm City, as they like to call it. By the way, it'll be 63 degrees according to this long-range forecast. 10.5-point favorites. Nope, let's call it 10-point favorites. It's either 9.5 or 10-point favorites in favor of the Ravens. Krakenberger, Bill Krakenberger and I were talking about this on a numbers game at VEASAN this morning on Sirius XM Channel 204, how a lot of books have the 10s to prevent 6.5-point teasers from getting to the 3. But it's 10s or 9s or 9.5s. Totals 46.5, 47. Tennessee with that amazing win over the Patriots. Biggest sequence, of course, of that game was that goal line stand when the Patriots were up late in the first half. They were up 10-7, first and goal at the 1. Two plays where they lost a yard and gained a yard, and then on third down, no sneak on any of those downs from Tom Brady, whose calling card has always been the quarterback sneak. They lose 3 yards, they kick a field goal. Titans score before the end of the half, and they hold that score 14-13 really the whole way until the final sequence of the game when there was a pick six. Patriots ended up getting the ball subsequently there with 9 seconds left. That's when the pick six happened. But Baltimore, number one seed in the AFC against the low seed in the AFC in Tennessee. Baltimore with a 10-point bulge or 9.5. Mike, you got first crack at this.
Yeah, I like this game over. I think that Baltimore is going to put up a lot of points here. I don't think that this Tennessee defense, the defensive line, you know, the Patriots, it's had struggles running the ball. I don't think Baltimore will have these struggles. And then I think that will open the game up for Lamar. I get a little hesitant on laying close to 10 in this spot because I just, to Todd's point, you're up 14, you're up, you know, you're up 13 late, and that back door is always open. So I prefer to take this total over. I think the weather will be decent, and I think Baltimore will score somewhere close to 30 points.
Can anyone stop Derrick Henry, I guess, is what this really comes down to for me. Todd, your thoughts?
I'm looking at Baltimore's defense, and I wasn't as impressed with Tennessee's win. Now, we all won with that Tennessee thing, but that was more a bet against New England than a bet on Tennessee. I wasn't impressed with the fact that Tennessee couldn't score at all in the second half against New England, and that really – Tannehill really kind of looked like Miami Tannehill in that game rather than new and improved Tannehill. But if you look at who he did it against, there weren't a lot of really big teams in there, and the one really good team they played, they got spanked by New Orleans after taking a big lead. Baltimore Ravens, if you look back over the last about 10 to 12 weeks, the most points they've ever given up is 20 to New England when they won 37-20 in a blowout. Other than that, it's a bunch of 13, 16, 17, 6, 7, 10, 15 against teams similar to Tennessee. So I don't see Tennessee getting more than maybe 17 to 20 points here. And so I lean Baltimore actually in the game. I think Baltimore can easily get to 30. You know, 31-17 wouldn't surprise me. You know, I lean Baltimore. Again, I was not that impressed with Tennessee. I think it was more New England just didn't have the horses. And, you know, they won because New England couldn't score. You know, I'm not that impressed with Tennessee. Look, when they played the Saints, one of the few really good teams they played, they were up big and just blew the whole game. So, you know, why can't Baltimore get into the 30s on them? They should easily be able to. I'll lean Baltimore.
I've noticed you've leaned San Francisco and leaned Baltimore, but not bets for you? Preflop? None?
I'll probably do some form of teasing with these games.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think I'm going to pre-flop bet them, but I'll definitely be, you know, probably looking for ways to either 10-point tease, 7-point tease, finding some kind of tease, you know, combination because I like these two favorites.
I'm the same way. I loved a couple games last week pre-flop, but did, and Tennessee being one of them, even on the money line as we discussed on this show, but I'm with you. I am not gravitating towards these games in terms of ATS pre-flop the same way, but yes, teasers are definitely going to be in play. We'll get to that momentarily. And not to fixate on Derrick Henry, but I brought this up on the radio side. Do you see that footage they had of Derrick Henry in high school? That was the most comical high school footage I have ever seen of anybody. It's like if the four of us ran out a peewee football team to play us, and then we had Todd just bowl all of them over. Like, it's just, it was just unbelievable to watch. And Dave Farrah, Matt Brown, and I, we do a fantasy show on Sunday. We started to look up Derrick Henry's stats his senior year in high school. He had two different times where he had back-to-back games with six touchdowns. He had another game where he had like 57 carries for 450-some yards. Just ridiculous. But he has been better and better as the year progresses. He did the same thing last year. We will see if Baltimore can hold him in check. That'll go a long way towards determining this one. Jeff.
I agree with not betting this game pre-flop. This is a lean for me as well. And I'll go actually oppo of what Todd said. And I'll go with the Titans getting the 10 or the 9.5, especially if it's the whole 10. Derrick Henry didn't play against New Orleans. The Titans have beaten Kansas City during this stretch when they've when they had Tannehill and they've gotten better and gotten the playoffs. Granted, that was such a wacko game and it was almost 2 months ago. But look, Tennessee's defense does not get enough credit, and I know New England is lacking weapons and it's a shell of what that offense has been through the years. But they still shut down the Patriots after that goal line stand. The Patriots never threatened to score again. And at some point, when it was kept hanging at 14-13, he's still in the back of your mind. It's like, it's still Brady. It's still Belichick. The Patriots are going to find a way. And the Titans never even allowed them to even get close to field goal range to take the lead at the end of that game. And the one thing I keep coming back to, the Ravens have not played a bad game since week 4. At some point, a clunker has to show up, or the Ravens are, like Aaron Schott said on a numbers game last week, Gil, or the Ravens are legitimately a top 7 team in the history of the NFL if they don't have a clunker.
Yeah.
So at some point, something's got to give. Either Baltimore is a legitimate top 10 team of all time, or they're going to have a clunker. And Tennessee is an uneasy matchup because of the way they run the ball and the way they play defense. This feels like a 1-score game. So it's an easy, it would be a take up to 9.5 or 10 with Tennessee for me.
Yeah, and I hope people listen to the first part of this podcast because I threw on the Aaron Schott segment where he does, by his rankings, again, from Football Outsiders, which go all the way back through the 1985 season, he's got the Baltimore Ravens, as far as regular seasons are concerned, as the 7th greatest team in the last 34 years or 35 years of the National Football League. As far as Sunday,
you know,
yes, please.
Can I say something?
Please.
He also said, I like Aaron Schatz. I like models. He also, earlier in the season, has New England as, I think, the best defense or second best defense of all time. I mean, can we just slow our roll a little bit here?
Well, they finished 16th best.
Right, but I'm saying at the time, yeah, he was telling us that it was number one or number two.
And you and I questioned
it.
You and I questioned it, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And so I will question that if the Ravens win the Super Bowl, they're the 7th best team of all time. I think that is also a little, aggressive.
Well, and I questioned him as well, but I think what was interesting more than anything is the gap between the Ravens in terms of all of his simulations and other teams winning the Super Bowls. This was before winning the Super Bowl. This is before the playoffs started. That in his simulations, the Ravens win 44% of the time, the Chiefs and the Niners 14% of the time. Like, that is a gap that I think most observers would be like, wow, are you serious? But Jeff, your counter to what Todd's saying would be what?
Look, if they can play, they have not played a bad game since they lost to Cleveland in week 4. So the big counter to me on that is it is extremely difficult to play double-digit weeks in a row of near-flawless football. You could argue that Lamar Jackson has not played a single bad game since then. Their special teams has played flawlessly except for that random Thursday night against the Jets. And Todd brought it up perfectly defensively. The Ravens' defense has been really good since they got Marcus Peters, and they've been shutting teams down. Just at some point to me, and the reason I lean Tennessee, is how it is nearly impossible to play 13 straight games with no clunkers.
Yeah.
So I just would I would Tennessee. Be scared.
I would just be scared with the fact I think that that Tennessee's going to have to score some points to stay inside the number. And Derrick Henry is not really a point scorer. He's more of a control of the ball person.
Todd, the big thing, too, is, and you mentioned, and you're right, Ryan Tannehill could come out and throw three interceptions, and it's 21-0 yep. Baltimore 9 minutes into the game, and my bet's cooked. That's 100% the case. But I'm relying on Tennessee's defense, which I don't think gets enough credit, to slow down Baltimore enough. And then when they're on offense, Derrick Henry, not to do what he did last week, because that's 180 yards is not going to happen every week. If Henry's in the 120s, Tennessee's got a shot here to at least keep this thing within a number. And, of course, down 16 with 5 minutes to go, they could get a backdoor touchdown, and then I'm in that way too.
Yeah, I mean, that's why most of us aren't on anything pre-flop, because we can see all kinds of scenarios. Last thing about the greatest team of all time thing, or greatest team at least through 1985, you know, we often talk about recency bias when it comes to week-to-week National Football League in our handicapping. This is sort of the opposite of recency bias, that we're almost too close to the sun with a team like the 2019 Ravens. We almost go the other direction when we think about teams of lore. So while we're in the moment, I don't think we always realize, because what Jeff's saying is right, we may not realize just how good this team is that we're watching in Baltimore. The number one team since 1985 for Aaron Johnson Football Outsiders through his metric of DVOA is the 1991 Washington Redskins. And unless you're a Redskins fan like me, who lived every snap of that season and knew as a fan, this is the greatest damn fucking football team I've ever seen in my damn life, most people who are football fans, as big football fans as I am, don't process it that way. Didn't at the time. But with time, they're probably like, oh, wow, Mark Rippon only got sacked 7 times all year? Oh, wait a minute, they only lost one legitimate game all season and all the postseason? So I guess what I'm saying is it's a bolder take for Aaron to say what he's saying about the Ravens than it is for us to say, wait a minute, that can't be right about the Ravens. I think that needs to be said. Anyway, let's move to Sunday.
Gil, I'd like to ask the panel a question.
Please.
How big of a factor do you think for Lamar Jackson, his performance against San Diego in the divisional round will be as he heads into this game?
Interesting question.
Do you mean the San Diego game last year? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, when in the fourth quarter, the Baltimore fans were booing and calling for Flacco.
So let's just make a scenario. Let's say Tennessee goes up 10-0. Like, does that creep into Lamar Jackson? Is that what you're asking?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. How big of a factor was what probably his worst pro performance last year, which was in the playoffs against the Chargers?
I don't think it's going to be a factor. And you know, these guys, they're playing. I don't think they're thinking about that kind of thing. Lamar Jackson has been pretty much unstoppable all year. Harbaugh's been fantastic. The offensive coordinator has created a brilliant scheme there. I really don't think that's going to be an issue. And I personally really don't think that Tennessee is that good just based on the New England game. I mean, New England lost to Miami at home. They were not a good team at the end of the year. Tennessee barely squeaked that game out. Now, Jeff was saying New England never got close. Had the guy Edelman not dropped the ball at around the 50-yard line, they may have lost the game. So I don't think it's going to have a major factor in be a major factor in this game for Lamar. I think they're rolling too well right now, and you know, I just don't really buy into that kind of stuff.
I'm with Todd on that. Mike, you feel otherwise for asking the question? I'm guessing.
I think it's a question you have to ask when handicapping this game, and wonder, especially from in-game opportunities, if the start isn't ideal, as Jeff suggests, for Baltimore, will that put extra pressure on Jackson in this spot?
Definitely worth pondering, and time will tell. I mean, just in general, Baltimore falling behind in a game. Like, we just don't see that, right? So,
Well, Gil, add one thing here. When is John Harbaugh? Look, Harbaugh is an unbelievable coach. He's won a Super Bowl. He won a Super Bowl with Flacco, for goodness sakes. They've never been the hunted. Right. They've always been the hunter.
Right.
This is the first time that they're the number one overall seed. Everyone's trying to chase down Baltimore. Now, it's a whole different team than what they've had in the past. Obviously, Ray Lewis is gone. Flacco's gone. Ed Reed's gone. All those elite players from those, from even that Super Bowl team, for the most part, aren't there anymore. But this is a new game for John Harbaugh as a coach. And I imagine he'll probably be his steady hand self. But I think Mike's question does have a little bit of merit. I don't think it will impact it, because I think Lamar Jackson's a completely different player than he was 12 months ago, especially throwing the football. He's a lot more confident, and he was much better this year than he was at any point a year ago throwing the ball. But if it's somehow 10-0 Tennessee at the end of the first quarter and Baltimore struggling to move the ball, that's when the questions can start creeping in a little bit.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying is we've framed it as a Lamar Jackson mental thing. But what I guess I'm saying is they're just never behind to begin with. How would we be able to differentiate between the fact that it's Lamar or just the fact that the team as a whole is just never used to being in this position? Are they a team built for a comeback, right? So it'll be fun to watch. That's the second game on Saturday, that's for sure. Sunday, another AFC game. This is the game between the Houston Texans and the Kansas City Chiefs. 3:05 Eastern, 12:05 Pacific start. Chiefs, 9.5, 10-point favorites, right in that same pocket as Baltimore the day before. Houston, boy, I don't know how they won that game against Buffalo. But, man, 16-0 deficit. They come back to make it 16-8. Strip sack. They get a field goal. Then a 3-and-out. Houston takes the lead after a 2-point conversion. It's 19-16. Buffalo matriculates. There's a Josh Allen lateral on the way down out of matriculation. I don't know what he was doing. But anyway, they end up getting it third down in field goal range to tie the game. The Bills do. Intentional grounding. Horrible sack. They lose 33 yards on two plays. That second play, they should have punted anyway on 4th-and-27, but there was no one in Sean McDermott's ear to say, hey, coach, probably should punt. We got the three timeouts anyway. Might as well pin them. But they do end up successfully using those three timeouts after three rushes, and then Houston doesn't convert on a 4th-and-1 where Deshaun Watson gets stoned. Buffalo ends up tying it in regulation. Houston on an unbelievable, iconic play for their franchise. Deshaun Watson bounces off two tackles, spin and bounces, really. Finds his running back, 34-yard pickup, and of course, Kymie Fairbairn wins it in overtime, 22-19. And that, of course, doesn't even include the phantom blindside block on the Bills that preceded that, that took them out of potential game-winning field goal range. Houston's here. Somehow they got through, but they get the Chiefs. Weather in Kansas City. If this game were on Saturday, snow in the forecast. But on Sunday, above freezing and nothing but sunshine in KC. We start with you, Todd, on this one.
First of all, I just want to say, is there a coach that does worse on 4th-and-inches than Bill O'Brien in the history of football? I can remember so many 4th-down-and-less-than-1 where Bill O'Brien somehow blew it. And it happened again this past week. But I can remember a Raiders game one time, and there was a Chiefs game. I mean, just so many antics and craziness happening when it's – I remember one time he gave it to like a 160-pound back on 4th-and-1 and didn't make it from many years ago. He is just a 4th-and-1 nightmare. Anyways, that being said, I don't think Houston has a chance in hell in this game. I know they beat him early in the year. That was a different Kansas City team. I think Kansas City has their – ducks in a row. Am I going to pregame bet it? Probably not. Again, I'll probably be looking to use it in some form of teaser. I don't think Houston's that good. I don't even think they should have won the game last week. I think if Buffalo, you know, had played that a little smarter, there was no way Houston was even coming back in that game. So many things had to go right for them to even advance. I think they're a very flawed football team with a very flawed coach. Again, I think he's a good coach, not an elite coach. He's kind of like a Tomlin. He can get you to 9, 10, 11 wins, but he's not going to take you anywhere spectacular. I'm not a fan of Bill O'Brien as far as being an elite coach. So, you know, like I said, I'll probably be on some form of Kansas City and teasing, but I don't want any part of Houston.
Yeah, I failed to mention the total is the one that's moved the most on the board. 48.5 all the way to 51 now. 51 across the board in this game. And I wonder if that's because the weather looks like it will have cleared up already by Sunday. Jeff?
I'll go under that 51. How is Houston going to score more than 10 points in this game with the way Kansas City's defense is starting to play over these last 6 weeks? First matchup was a high-scoring game finished at 55, but it was a different Kansas City Chiefs squad there. Mahomes had his banged up ankle. The Chief defense was still historically awful at that point early in the year, but the Chief defense has really, really looked like a real unit and a good unit the last six games. Mahomes is healthy. The offense is healthy as a whole. This Chiefs team is really, really scary right now as a whole. I don't feel comfortable laying that many points because same reason that I wouldn't lay it with Baltimore. All it takes is one backdoor touchdown and you're screwed, even though you may be up 17 or 14 basically the whole way. I'll go under to 51. This Kansas City team, Gil, there's a reason that I hopped in on them on the futures market in between week 16 and 17, which ended up turning out to be the correct time to do it. We couldn't have foreseen New England botching that game to Miami, but they did. So I'm all in on KC winning this game. Not comfortable enough to lay the points, but I'll go under. I'm not sure how Houston scores more than 10 or 14 points in this game.
And let's not forget that Houston Buffalo game. Referees almost tried to give Buffalo a touchdown on the opening kickoff of the second half when referees briefly decided not to pay attention to the safe signal given by the Houston return man, tried to give Buffalo a touchdown when they recovered in the end zone, but cooler heads prevailed from the referees caucusing, and they decided, okay, no, that's not what he meant. He did give a safe sign. Let's not all get crazy. Sort of like that coin flip in that Cowboys-Rams game where Dak Prescott did or did not say defer, and they were like, oh, no, they get the ball twice, and then cooler heads prevailed there as well. The XFL is showing us that all of this referee injection stuff, just stop it. You know exactly what Dak Prescott meant. If a team receives in one half, it should just be given that if they kick off, if they defer in one half, they should just get the ball automatically in the second, and much like this with the safe sign that was given. He's given himself up. Shouldn't be a touchdown. Let's not act like it should be. Mike, did you feel that way about that play?
I did, Gil. It's beyond ridiculous now, and the level of the officiating has sunk to its lowest. And maybe I'm remembering things as they never were, but growing up, I don't remember so many gaffes on a weekly basis where you could find a top five bad, horrendous calls or top 10. So many of these head officials now are just empty suits and they're not memorable at all. And we grew up with very what seemed like commanding figures in these games. And maybe replay has changed it, but the credibility of the product continues to decline.
I agree. I don't remember it being like this before. And coaching decisions being so bad. Your thoughts on this one, Mikey?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy here, but I think this is too many points. Let's remember that Kansas City was life and death to beat San Diego and Phillip Rivers by 10 in the last game of the year. I mean, they needed a kick return touchdown to really turn that game around. I don't know. Watching, and maybe it's a recency bias of watching Deshaun Watson and how tough he is down the stretch in games. And you know, they have some weapons back this week. And I think that they keep this game within the number. I cannot lay it. I'm not sure if I pre-flop it or if I wait for end game, but I'm a heavy lean here on the Texans.
Wow. I'm surprised. You're the first person I've heard say that this week. Sort of like the Clemson-LSU thing I'm getting worried about because everybody's with Clemson in the points.
Nobody was talking about the Vikings being able to beat the Saints last week, too, and nobody's talking about the Texans this week.
You're 100% right. I didn't hear one person until like that morning when I met somebody from Minnesota, Dave Ferrer's brother, who was like, oh, I think they'll win. Until that point, I had not heard one person think the Vikings could win outright. Seattle at Green Bay is obviously the last game of the four. Winner plays the winner of Minnesota-San Francisco in the NFC. Weather in Green Bay, once again, if it were Saturday, they'd have snow. Instead, it's just going to be cold as hell. 20 to 24 degrees. Obviously, we've seen games much colder in Green Bay before. By Green Bay standards, maybe that's even a little balmy at this time of year. Green Bay's a 4-point favorite. There's some 4.5s out there as well. In this one, the total's 47. Shortest spread of the board, that's for sure. Jeff, we start with you here.
Oh, man. So Seattle needed Josh McCown to play that whole game instead of Carson Wentz in order to win that game, Gil. I really do believe that because at some point, I mean, McCown kept driving them down and driving them down, and then something would befell the Eagles and we couldn't get in the end zone last week. Green Bay, as we talked about on this podcast and on the numbers game and basically all over the Visa network as well, Green Bay's paper tiger, 13-3. But yet here they are. They're the 2 seed. This game could very easily, it wouldn't stun me if Minnesota went to San Francisco and won. But we could be staying, all right, this game is for home field in the NFC Championship game. I have nothing on this game, Neil. There are no bets at all because I could see Seattle winning the game outright. I could see Green Bay winning by 2 touchdowns. I could see this game ending 28-24. I could see this game ending 13-9. I have no feel whatsoever. So this is a complete nothing for me in this game.
I just got a text. This has nothing to do with anything pro football, that Mike Leach is headed to Mississippi State. Oh, my God. So you got
those egg bowls are going to be something.
They are, really, between Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach. Wow. Can't lose the press conference. Yeah, of course, as Jeff was alluding to, Seattle got here by virtue of their win over the Eagles last week. Carson Wentz hurt in the first quarter. I was saying on a numbers game, all these people are like, oh, Carson Wentz can't get it done in the big game. He got blindsided in the helmet and pounded into the ground. Stop with the Carson Wentz narratives. But Seattle got it done. Identical 17-9 win over the Eagles that they had in the regular season. Much different trajectory of the game, though. And in this one, I would argue, you know, for as much as I kill Sean Payton in his performance against the Vikings, Pete Carroll kind of botched the clock at the end of the first half, but he got bailed out by a roughing the passer penalty. And at the end of the game, if that pass doesn't get completed from Russell Wilson to DK Metcalf, who knows, maybe people are killing Pete Carroll for that, too. I happen to like that pass at that time. But the Seahawks get it done. They sack McCown 6 times, Wentz 1 time before that, 7 total sacks. Mikey, what do you think here?
I love this under, Gil. But let's not forget this is a 5:30 local start. This is a night game. It will be dark already at kickoff in Green Bay, and it's only going to get colder as the game goes on. I think the total's way too high. We've seen the cold weather games in Green Bay already this year. It's very hard to catch these long passes. It's hard to move the ball down the field quick. I think the Green Bay defense has gotten better through the course of the year. I still think at 13-3, they've overachieved that record is how good as they really are. I think their offense is actually their weakness. I would think that Green Bay is going to be able to win in this spot just because Seattle really doesn't have a rushing attack and it'll make them one-dimensional. But this is, for me, it's a play on first quarter under, first half under, and game under.
47 is the total right now in this game as we do this on Thursday morning. Again, not quite the Ice Bowl, not quite that game against the Giants where Tom Coughlin's face fell off, but still 20-24 degrees. By the way, I thought Tom Coughlin was going to die on the field that game. Like, I really was concerned for his health. Todd?
You know, I just want Russell Wilson when I'm in a tough spot. He just seems so incredibly elusive and able to pull plays out of his butt. I just don't understand how you stop the guy. Now, granted, there have been games where he has been stopped. The game against Arizona was kind of a conundrum. How that happened, I wasn't really sure. And there have been another couple of games where Seattle just hasn't looked that great on offense. And quite frankly, Seattle's defense is not exactly great either. But, you know, in the end, if I'm getting 4.5, I mean, this is the kind of game that feels to me like a backdoor touchdown could easily get scored. I think I want Russell Wilson running around like a crazy person, causing Green Bay's defense tremendous problems late. And, you know, if anything, I would lean to Seattle here. Also, Green Bay's just been up and down. I mean, they got blown out at San Francisco. They got blown out by the Chargers. I mean, who is Green Bay? They killed Minnesota on the road. Are they the good team? Are they the bad team? I'm not sure what they are. So, you know, I don't like this game much, but if I have to play it, I would lean to Seattle.
Yeah, I don't remember a show where I didn't have one single pre-flop pick on any of these. I'm doing radio in my hometown, Washington, D.C., later today, and I don't know what I can provide these people other than teasers, which are about to come up. But you raised an interesting point there, too, Todd, which makes the NFL – this is what makes the NFL so maddening. You pointed out Seattle just a couple weeks ago. They looked like dog crap against Arizona. And Minnesota, 2 weeks before their win last week against the Saints, they looked, as Jeff put it, as we put it on a numbers game this week, they made the Packers defense look like the 85 Bears. So, and then 2 weeks later, they're this unbelievable team on the complete opposite end. So it's just such a maddening game to be able to determine from week to week, even here with full motivation, obviously, in the postseason. As always, guys, support for today's show comes from Bookmaker.eu, an industry leader for close to 30 years. Pro players consider them a must because they're first to post odds, take the highest limits, and pride themselves on never having kicked out a winning player. That is huge. Bookmaker's a high-volume sports book best suited for the sophisticated player, also caters to large recreational players, and their motto is always, is where the lines originate, because chances are the sports book at which you've been betting follows their lines. Pretty damn good chance, as a matter of fact. And right now, if you visit bookmaker.eu/gill, that's bookmaker.eu/GILL, you'll claim your exclusive 100% welcome bonus of up to $300. That's bookmaker.eu/gill to join and claim your welcome bonus of up to $300 right now. You will not regret it. Betting the only way I know how, the indispensable, bookmaker.eu. Check it out. Thank me later. Which brings us to speed round. We'll get to the final two questions momentarily, but let's start with our two-team, six-point teasers of the week, which, once again, I wasn't able to get correct last week because who killed it for me? Oh, because New Orleans didn't get there. New Orleans didn't get there. That's right. Jeff, let's start with you. Two-team six-pointer, sir.
All right, San Francisco down to one, and I will I'll make this all Saturday so I can get the I can just torture myself for one day. We'll pop Tennessee up to the 16 or the 15 and a half, whichever number it is. We'll pop Tennessee up. So San Francisco minus one, and Tennessee either 16 or 15 and a half.
I don't hate it, Mikey.
Well, the 49ers is the obvious one for me, down to one. I think I'll take the Texans up to 15 and a half or whatever.
Wow. Okay. Dad?
Give me Seattle plus 10 and a half and give me the San Francisco 49ers down to one.
Oh, Toddy, I have your same teaser. That means it's going to lose. San Francisco, Seattle.
Should we all be betting Minnesota now since we all had the Niners in there?
Oh, man, this is not good. Not good. By the way, Todd and I do a segment. He's on every Wednesday with me. We do a segment on a numbers game at VSiN, 7 to 9 Pacific, 10 to noon Eastern, Monday through Friday at SiriusXM 204 called Half-Baked Betting Tips with Todd. Because if they were fully baked, we wouldn't talk about them. Do you enjoy the half-baked segment, Todd, or is pretty much all that we talk about sort of in-game half-baked stuff? It's not really half-baked.
You know,
we think it through.
I just love coming on a numbers game and doing my my part for the community to give something back, you know.
well, you have the multi-million dollar contract with the podcast, so what do you care now?
Exactly.
All right, final two questions, gentlemen. Again, we asked this during the regular season, and it makes more sense. But with four games on the slate, you could still ask it. We'll throw out Seattle-Green Bay because that's the short number, which is below six and a half. And we'll ask it of the other three games. Of the big favorites, San Francisco favored by 7 over Minnesota, Baltimore favored by 9.5 or 10 against Tennessee, and Kansas City favored by 9.5 or 10 against Houston. Which of the big favorites is the most likely to lose outright? Mikey.
Chiefs.
Wow. Todd.
The biggest favorite to lose outright, I think is going to be it's a tough one.
Well, yeah, we're supposed to say San Francisco, but we all picked them.
That's right.
I can't really see one. I mean, Seattle's not going to count, right?
No, Seattle's doesn't count. You can't pick that one.
I don't want to pick any of these teams.
I don't want to pick any of them.
All right, I like it.
I don't want to pick any of them, Jeff.
Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm going to say Baltimore.
Wow.
I'm going to say Baltimore. Just because I can't bring myself to say Kansas City against Houston. Although Houston, I mean, everything I just said about about Minnesota and Seattle, I could say that about Houston 2 in the opposite way. Houston, 1 week they're terrible. The next week I was like, oh, there's Houston. They could beat anybody. And then they suck. So, yeah, I'm going Baltimore, though. All right, and then the final question. You had to play. This is going to be sort of counterintuitive because we don't like any of these. So maybe I should say, maybe I should do it the other way around. Let's say you didn't have to play any of these, but you were forced to play one of them, pre-flop ATS, which I've never really asked before, but this seems like the appropriate week to ask it. You were forced to play ATS on one of these games. Which team in which game would it be, Todd?
If I didn't, one game that I don't want to play ever, I'm going to say...
In other words, on the side, is there one you're forced to play? Like, you didn't like any of them pre-flop ATS, right?
Right.
Okay, so, but I'm forcing you to pick one, Todd. It's not that complicated. Which one do you want?
I guess if you're forcing me to play, I'll take San Francisco.
You didn't want to answer either of the final two questions, did you? All right.
I didn't like these questions this week.
I'm sorry. All right, that's an answer, I guess. Jeff?
Oh, by virtue of the fact that I give Tennessee as a lean, I would take the Titans if you're going to make them pick one of these four games.
And Mikey?
I already gave San Francisco out.
You already gave San Francisco. Mine would be the Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh.
Ooh. Obviously, they're in my tees with the Niners, but that would be my choice. All right, boys, I think that's really it. Really, we've done all we can do. Divisional round, National Football League. Jeff, Parlay, thank you very much for coming in on such short notice. You are a mensch. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Gil. Always a pleasure.
And we will have Michael Lombardi on next week with us for championship round. And then the week in between championship round and the Super Bowl, I know, Todd, you said you're going to be out of town, but we're still doing a lifestyle podcast. Are you still down for that, or do you want me to get somebody else to do it?
No, I'll do Lifestyles of the Relatives of the Rich and Famous.
Okay, well, it's not kind of like that show. It's more like restaurants, and I don't know what else you do. You don't do anything but do sports, though, and bet sports. Well, Todd can tell us his favorite sports books in town.
Gil, this might be a good week for the Parles food expertise to hop in for wish.
I can testify that Jeff Parles does enjoy food at a very high level of quantity, let's put it that
way.
He
does. Well, Mikey's definitely in. Yes, Mikey, you're in for that kind of show.
I'm in, but I'm interested, Gil, in the concept of having Todd on to do a lifestyle show when he's famous for not having a life.
Life and no life and no style. Both.
Look, you know what? I will take those both as a compliment. Thank you.
Of course, Mark Meltzer will be here to join us. Man About Town for the Vegas Lifestyle Show. But that's after next week when we have Lombardi Championship round. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Todd. Good luck to all of you. Division round, National Football League. Thank you so much for listening.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.